Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank Q1 2020 results conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Nnamdi Okonkwo. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining our Q1 2020 conference call. In compliance with our social distancing principle, in view of the pandemic, most members of my executive team have joined us remotely so that we're all not in the same location. Okay, I'll start by commenting on our performance for Q1 of 2020. It was clearly a challenging period for governments and businesses across the world. Here in Nigeria, the pandemic actually started impacting from March. January, February performance, of course, was truncated by the seriousness of the pandemic in March. As we go on, we'll be making some comments regarding Q2, because Q2, one month, is already gone, and we have two more months to go. That means, obviously, it will still be impacting business. Anyway, back to the numbers. Q1 showed resilience of our business model, and most importantly, the proactive steps we have taken as the pandemic set in. We closed the period with a 5.7% growth in gross earnings to 51.2 billion, driven largely by 13.9% growth in interest income on loans and 5% increase in interest income on liquid assets. Net interest income grew by approximately 49% to close at approximately 25 billion, while total income increased from 24.2% to 30 billion, up from 24.4 billion in Q1 of 2019. On PBT, we witnessed a marginal decline of 1.4% to 6.6 billion, slightly down from 6.7 billion in the same period in 2019. And this was due to 103% rise in impairment charges and a 29.6% increase in total operating expenses. And I'll give details, starting with total operating expenses. That line was driven mainly by regulatory charges, NDIC and AMCON charges, followed by advert and security, as well as staff costs. So across these five lines, they accounted for about 84.5% of the cost growth in Q1 2020. But we also like to note that total operating expenses declined by 10.3% if you compare it with Q4 of 2019, which now resulted in improved cost income ratio to 71.3% if you compare with 73.4% where we closed the financial year 2019. On net interest margin, it improved from 6.2% in 2019 to 6.6% Q1, on account of significantly lowered funding costs, and this was despite declining yields on earning assets. Average cost of funds dropped 20 bps to 4.4%, largely due to significant decline in cost of deposits to 4% from 6.7% in 2019 financial year. Yields on earning assets came down to 11.8%, and this was due to decline in our average lending rate. Our average lending rate declined from 13.8% in 2019 to 11.3% in Q1 of 2020. the yields on CBN intervention funds, which accounts for 13% of our loan book, dropped from 9% to 5% because our regulator decided to reduce those rates. So the intervention fund from CBN went down from 9% to 5%. That accounted for the 13% yield. We now report on our FX balance sheet numbers using an FX rate of 386.5 to the dollar. We currently report at 386.5 per dollar. This is when compared with 364.7 per dollar in December 2019. So our Q1 numbers were converted at 386.5, just for emphasis. So as you are aware, we mark our foreign currency balance sheet numbers. We've said this over and over at our calls. We mark our foreign currency balance sheet numbers against NAFEX rate, which has changed in response to the recent adjustments in rates. Excuse me. So the change in currency rate had some impact on our financial numbers, and I'll outline those impacts. First and foremost, total customer deposits increased by 10.4% year to date to 1.35 trillion from 1.23 trillion in 2019 year end. So actual growth was 8.9%, while impact of the currency adjustments was 1.5%. Now, if you then go to the loan side, net loans and advances increased by 3.4% year to date to 1.17 trillion, up from previous 1.13 trillion in 2019. But actual growth was 0.9%, while the impact of currency adjustment was 2.5%. Overall, we delivered another strong growth in retail segment of our business, as our savings deposits increased by 13.4% to close at 312 billion. And we are on course towards achieving seventh year of double digit growth in savings. So savings deposits now accounts for 23.1% of total deposits, when compared with 22.5% in financial year ended 2019. On digital banking, that segment now accounts for over 28% of fee income, driven by 50% enrollment rate on our mobile internet banking products, and 83% of our transactions done on our digital channels currently. However, digital banking income declined by 11% from Q4 2019 due to downward fee revisions for electronic transactions in line with the new bankers' tariff. New bankers' tariff reduced fees you could charge on digital channels. So we had the highest income impact on our ATM line. This is because we are net acquirers, so we have significant not on us transactions. So it was expected that a reduction in the rate you could charge would naturally impact us. On foreign currency loans, it now accounts for 43% of loan book. The key sectors with over 25% of loans in foreign currency are oil and gas, transport, manufacturing, and power. Now, these four sectors account for 95% of our foreign currency loan book. Our NPL ratio, which are all stage 3 loans, increased to 4.8% from 3.3% for financial year ended 2019. This we can attribute to 50.4% increase in absolute NPL book, which increased to 58.1 billion. Now, the growth in NPL was primarily due to our early identification of sectors. Like I said at the opening, we already knew that it's going to be a softer Q2, and we started identifying those facilities are likely to be impacted by COVID-19 pandemic and the attendant lockdown. So we had to increase our provisioning. So over 85% of the growth in stage 3 loans are from manufacturing, transport, and general commerce sectors. 14% of our stage 3 loans are in foreign currency. As for regulatory ratios, we remained above the required thresholds. Capital adequacy ratio came in at 17.7%. Liquidity ratio closed at 31.6%. Like I said earlier, we expect that Q2 will be the softest year this year, because that's when Nigeria will be taking probably the biggest impact, because that's the first quarter we'll have a full quarter since COVID hit. In this period, we've had over 80% of our workforce working remotely, and we could still have up to 50% working remotely until end of June. This is just to ensure safety of our staff by offering telehealth services in some cases, and then sequential opening of branches in other cases. So we've been able to operate largely seamlessly, leveraging our technology platforms. So the investment in technology, which we've repeatedly reported, beginning to pay off, and we actually took advantage of that to improve our internal efficiency and digital channels to serve our customers. So while we see increased adoption of digital channels by customers during this period, we also note the significantly weaker consumer disposable income. Of course, with the reduced disposable income, that reduced the average transaction volume per customer. So that line will be facing some challenges, as expected. So we'll continue to monitor and proactively manage the evolving risks and opportunities associated with the pandemic. And we'll take appropriate actions whilst ensuring the safety of our staff and customers. So that has been the opening remarks. I will now hand over to Bola Ho, who will take us through detailed presentation, and then we'll take questions thereafter. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nnamdi. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll go straight to slide 4, which just shows an overview of the bank. About 5.3 million accounts now. Not a lot of changes in terms of the staff numbers. 2.2 million cards. 2.6 million mobile customers. That's about 50% enrollment ratio now. From a governance perspective, 14 board members, 6 executives, and 8 non-executives, and an 8-member executive management team. On slide 5, it just shows our digital and retail banking story. Account growth was a little slow for the first quarter, as expected. It was 2%. Strong growth in savings was already 13% over the first quarter. Obviously, also, they offer some of the most attractive rates now because of the regulatory-induced interest rates. Mobile and internet banking customers grew at about 6%. And then there was a slight decline in the retail lending book. We're moderating our appetite there. The pandemic has increased the risk profile of that sector. 83% of the transactions are still done digitally, and Nnamdi has spoken about the contribution of digital. It's about 28% of fee-based income. I'll go straight to slide 9, which just speaks about a lot of the performance highlights, which he's already spoken about in his opening remarks. So I'll just move to the commentary, the performance commentary on slide 10. And that speaks to what drove the numbers. A lot of it was driven by the fund-based income. Interest income was up about 13% over the period. Expenses were up, but they came down quarter on quarter, and that declined the cost-income ratio. NII improved to 6.6%, driven mainly by the reduction in the funding cost, even though the yield on earning assets were lower. Balance sheet being marked now at 386.5, that drove the bulk of the growth we saw in the risk assets, and about 1.5% of the growth in the deposit base. Savings has crossed the 300 mark. It's about 312 billion. it could taper down a little bit this quarter if the pandemic continues to bite harder. I'll go to slide 11, which just shows the year-on-year comparison of the numbers. You see strong growth on the fund-based income lines, interest income on loans, on liquid assets, and then you see a marked reduction in funding costs, so which is also due to the market yields on the operating environment. Fee income was down. Digital was down about 24.5%. A lot of that linked to the reduction in electronic banking fees, and about 50-60% of that coming from the ATM business. And then impairments were double this period, almost the highest impairments we've had in the first quarter for a long time. And a lot of that was driven by the early identification of sectors we feel will be impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, and then we started taking action. Slide 12 just shows a quarterly trend over the last four quarters. And even though year-on-year you see fund-based income is up, on a quarter-on-quarter basis it's down by about 15% interest income on loans, which is not unconnected with the lower interest rate environment. But then you see interest expense on customer deposits is also down about 30%. From the balance sheet on slide 13, very slight growth in the Naira loan book. On our last call, we spoke about a decline in the public sector loan book, and then you see some growth in the foreign currency loan book, and a lot of that is linked to the devaluation impact. You look at cash reserve, it's up about 65 billion, and then you look at strong growth in the deposit lines, current account about 6.2%, savings at 13%, and then time at about 18%. So liquidity profile is still strong. If you look at the analysis of the gross earnings, you see a lot more growth from the fund-based income as we saw in the other line, and then slower growth on fee-based income, and we expect that this quarter will be slightly more challenging. Net interest margin has moved from 6.2 to 6.6, surprised positively, mainly because we brought down the funding cost faster. And on the yield on earning assets, it's come down about to 11.8%. We expect to see a little more pressure there as we go into this quarter, where we expect to see some restructuring of some of the loans in the portfolio. On slide 16, which speaks to interest, which speaks to the expense book, even though on year-on-year basis you see a growth, but if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis, apart from the NDIC and AMCON cost, all the expense lines were actually down. The growth in NDIC and AMCON cost is basically due to the growth in the balance sheet and deposit base over the period, but we're working on the other expense lines. So you see a marked decline in a lot of the other expense lines, a lot of them down double digit. We'll go to slide 18, which is just an analysis of the funding base, and you see strong growth on most of the fund on the deposit and funding lines. Borrowings are down. So on the average, we started off the year very strong deposit growth, in line with, I think we're already much ahead in line with the guidance, but we think there will be some customer needs for deposits going forward. If the pandemic continues, we might see some reduction in that line. Analysis of deposits, we've spoken about a lot of this. Foreign currency deposits are now about 25% of the book. So the color of the deposit book has changed. Right now, between domiciliary deposits and savings deposits, both of them are actually almost getting to 50% of the deposit book. Retail banking on slide 20, there was a marked jump at the end of the last quarter. That was the last quarter of the financial year from a retail lending perspective. But we've had to taper that down, obviously, from the pandemic issues we're seeing and the resultant challenges for payroll customers and consumers in that book. But then we continue to evaluate that position. LDR on adjusted is at 66, and when you adjust for the permissible weights in the SME and retail sector, it goes back to almost 70%. Slide 22 shows a breakdown of the loan book. I spoke about the government sector earlier. We also spoke about it on our Q1 call, on our full-year call, where we said that the book was already significantly down. And you see a decline also in the consumer loan book. A lot of the sectors you see some growth in, the oil and gas, a lot of it is driven from the currency position for some of them, and also for the power portfolio. The next slide just shows a breakdown of the loan book by currency, foreign currency and local currency. And if you look at it, you see that the key sectors where the foreign currency portfolio is concentrated is in the transport sector, that's the vessel business, the upstream sector, and then the services sector, and then also the manufacturing sector. If you take those sectors and power, you already have about 95% of the foreign currency loan book. So right now it's about 525 billion, it's roughly about over $1.3 billion dollars in that book. Now, the next slide just shows a trend of the loan book in terms of the contribution of each of the sectors. And largest sectors now are manufacturing is at 17%, and then you have transport and oil and gas at 11% each, and also government, which was down from where it was at the end of the financial year, where it was 12.7. So, 3.4% increase in the loan book, a lot of that coming from the currency adjustment, and FCY is now at 43% of the book, and then local currency is at 57% of the book. If you look at the trend over the last 5 quarters, the local currency peaked at about 61% in H1 2019, and then it's down to 57% because of the currency rate adjustment on the foreign currency book. Slide 26 shows a breakdown of the loan book into the stages, stage 1, stage 2, stage 3. There's been a marked growth in the stage 3 loan book. It's moved up by about 50%. And then when I look at the next slide, which is slide 28, you see where the bulk of the growth is coming from. And if you take the manufacturing sector, you take the general commerce sector, you take the transport sector, that's about 85% of the growth. And what some of those sectors have in common, some of these are trade loans, and then some of these are also sectors that we think will be impacted directly by the COVID pandemic. The oil and gas upstream sector will also be impacted, but a lot of the loans there are syndications, so we're working with the syndicates on those loans. If you look at slide 29, what it shows is the breakdown of the foreign currency loan book into local currency and foreign currency. And if you look at the foreign currency, the bulk of that now is in the transport segment, and that's where you have the vessel business. It's about 55% foreign currency and 44% local currency. That's where the bulk of the FCY NPLs are. And then we look at the NPL pressure points. Obviously, because of the growth we've had in the transport sector, that's moved to about 24%, and downstream about 26%. So those two sectors are about 50% of the NPL book, oil and gas downstream and the transport sector. Capital adequacy is still strong at 17.7. By the end of H1, when we audit our numbers, the capital we'll be looking at from a Tier 2 perspective will have dropped to just about 20% of what is there. But we think what we're going to capitalize over the period should more than offset for the $6 billion that will be falling off. And that has been the scenario over the past 3-4 years when we started doing the H1 audit. So slide 32 just shows a breakdown according to our business directorates. About 31% of the profit comes from the corporate and investment banking area, 26% from our Lagos business, 16% from our northern business, and about another 28% from our southern business. So fairly diversified from a deposit perspective, a lot more in the retail and commercial business, and then from an asset perspective is also fairly diversified. I'll go to slide 34, which just speaks to our guidance for the year. Out of the 9 indices, we're on track on 8. Where we're lagging is on the ROE guidance. But looking into Q2, just like Nnamdi said, we think this will be the softest of the quarters. We think April has given some idea of what to expect there. But we actually think April should be the worst of the month because that was a total lockdown scenario. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. We will pause to see if there are any questions. The first question comes from Tolu Alamutu from Telema. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for hosting the call today. I have a few questions, please. The first is on asset quality. The information that you've provided is really helpful, but can you just tell us, amongst the transport NPLs that you mentioned, what percentage of those companies would you say generate foreign currency revenues, and what percentage would you say are solely reliant on local currency? Secondly, on capital, you mentioned that part of your Naira-denominated Tier 2 is amortizing, basically, or running off in terms of capital credit. Are there any plans still to replace that, or do you think that market conditions now mean that that won't be possible? I appreciate that obviously your profitability will cover the 6 billion or more than cover the amount that will be lost. Thirdly, on the exchange rate, again, thanks for the information on the change in rates that you're using. Can you maybe remind us of the previous stress test that you've run to see what happens to your capital ratios if the Naira continues to weaken, say, to, I don't know, 450 or even worse versus the dollar? And then there's been a lot of talk about about the bank's conversations with the CBN and so on, but it seems so far there's been very little forbearance from the regulator in terms of the LDR or capital or liquidity requirements, which is what we're seeing in other countries. Can you maybe give us some idea of any discussions there may be or may have been about easing the requirements on banks just to make it easier for banks to get through the current crisis? And what do you think the latest statement from the CBN regarding staff retentions will mean for you in terms of efficiency ratios for this year? And finally, on liquidity, can you maybe shed some more light on how you may plan to improve the liquidity ratio, given that it's just above the regulatory minimum for now? And can you tell us how your Eurobond coupon payments are managed? I believe before you said that you keep the next coupon payments offshore. I just wanted to know whether you plan to keep more than one payment offshore right now. Thank you.
Yeah. So let me take the CBN question. I'll take the other questions. Eurobond coupon payment, the one for April, we paid that before lockdown. I think we paid on the 31st or 30th of March. And one of the reasons why we did that is we didn't know how the lockdown was going to go in terms of having access to the office and all that. So we decided to make the payment early. Typically, we plan ahead for those payments, and we'll have it as part of our cash flow forecasting. So we don't need to start looking for the liquidity when it's time to make the payment. It's already part of what we plan for. I think the next one will be around October, November. And so before then, we'll definitely be ready with the payment. In terms of liquidity, what are the plans? It was about 31.6. One of the things we've seen over this period is if you look at Q1, you see that there was minimal asset growth, but our average CIR ratio increased. So going into Q2, we don't intend for that to be less than 32.5%. But obviously, in a scenario where you're supposed to maintain a minimum LDR of 65%, what that has done is that it's had an impact in bringing down the liquidity ratio over the period. But we don't intend that to be less than 32.5. We're also keeping it thin from an efficiency perspective because we already have a high CIR with the regulators. And in terms of the exchange rate, last during the last call, what we modeled was that for every 5 naira movement, it sort of affects our capital by about 0.1%. So right now we're at 386.5, and so for every 5 naira movement, rough or dirty, affects the capital by about 0.1%. In terms of the Tier 2, we think that what we're going to capitalize in H1, so the Tier 2 that runs off at the end of H1 is actually 6 billion. If we look at what we intend to capitalize by the end of H1, we expect it to be higher than 6 billion. So we don't think the Tier 2 capital running off will have an impact on our capital numbers. In terms of, do we intend to issue a new one? No, not at this time, but we've registered a program. We have a program that is registered. We also have a call option on that bond, and so we have a call option after 5 years. This is the fifth year. If we were going to exercise the option, we would have had to exercise one, which is May, or we will do in November. Obviously, we're not exercising the option in May, so you're not likely to see short term. But in the medium term, we might. But in the short term, we might not. Definitely not this May. But we'll look at things as they unfold. It's already good we have the program in place. So if we need to take advantage of anything, we'll be able to do that. In terms of asset quality, FCY generating, if you look at the NPL book on slide, I'll just go back to that slide. I wanted to make a clarification. If you look at the NPL book on slide 29, in terms of FCY generating, the bulk of the assets there that are FCY generating are in the transport sector. So those are the bulk of the assets that are FCY generating. Most of the other assets are local currency, NPLs, or NPLs that arose from a trade book where you have imports and the goods have come in and the exchange rates have moved against the customer. Thank you. Namdi will take the question on the CBN forbearance.
Okay. Thank you. I think there are actually two questions on CBN. One had to do with forbearance, and then the other one had to do with staff retention, if I get it. Starting with forbearance, they've made that clear already. Sectors that are impacted by COVID-19, banks are required to identify obligors or borrowers who are impacted by COVID-19, restructure such facilities, and give as much. A lot of banks are already doing that. For us, as Fidelity, we've already submitted our first and second batches, so that's in process. So it will help customers stretch out their cash flows and service those loans as we progress. Second question you asked was about staff retention memo that just came out, I think, yesterday. Well, yeah, that's what that memo actually is speaking to is that you cannot let go more than 5 people without express approval of the Central Bank of Nigeria. But for us, how does it impact us? At the beginning of this year, indeed, it was a requirement for our, from our board's perspective, to show comparative analysis of Fidelity staff expenses, revenue per head compared with cost per head compared with industry. And we did that thorough analysis at the beginning of this year. We think we're in a good place concerning that. So we will leave it at that. But we'll continue to review from time to time and respond to changes in the environment. Thank you.
Tolu, does that answer all your questions?
Just a quick clarification. On the transport NPLs, what I was asking is how many of those companies generate FX? Are you saying all of them generate FX and none of them are basically exposed to the exchange rate movement?
So all those companies that in the stage 3 book of the transport sector, they all generate FX. What they are actually exposed to is that they have contracts with the IOCs, and when the oil prices decline, what happens is that the IOCs will negotiate those contracts, so their cash flows reduce. So really, that's why they're in that stage 3 book of the NPL. It's more from a renegotiation of the contracts they already have.
Yeah, and like we've said repeatedly, most of these, when you get transport, they are usually vessels for oil industry. So it's not like your typical haulage or You know, so it's also driven by what happens in the oil and gas industry. And they actually qualify for companies that have been impacted by COVID as we consider our restructure. Thank you, Tolu.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Wiwa Oni from Standard Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking time to take our questions. I have a few questions. The first is a follow-up on the central bank intervention. So on the, taken to the CBN for guarantees, how much of it are the intervention loans from the central bank, and how much of it is loans that you've created from your own liquidity? And secondly, I want to understand how you're looking at credit from a COVID-19 perspective. So given that we've run over a month of COVID now, how has your interaction with customers been, and how much of a risk do you see meeting your loan expectation for the year? And then I think thirdly, I want to understand how conversations on, I think though at some point there were conversations about central bank adjusting the interest rate link to the MPR for savings accounts. So I wanted to understand if there's been progress on that. And then also your view on the FX market. How have you been able to meet your customers' FX needs at this point in time? And then lastly, if you could remind your oil and gas exposure, how much of it is hedged? And then also, I know you're talking about conversations and restructuring. What kind of conversations do you, or what kind of moratoriums should you expect to impact interest income?
Okay, thank you, Muiwa. If you look at the oil and gas book, so there are basically three sectors there. If you look at the upstream book, that's where we have a lot of these syndications. We're taking it on an obligor by obligor basis, and because they each have their peculiarities. Some have, like we explained on our previous call, some have 3-month hedges, some have 6-month hedges. All the hedges run up by the end of this year. So for some, what is happening now has not yet directly impacted some. For some, it has already impacted them. So we're taking it on a case-by-case basis. What is obvious is that based on where the new normal is from a pricing perspective, there'll have to be an extension of the tenor of those loans. Obviously, that has an impact from an IFRS 9 perspective because you're looking at effective interest rates on those loans. When you term it out, what normally happens is that at the earlier stages, you have a lower effective interest rate. So that will have some impact, you know, on the interest income. But it is when you actually do that, when we actually have a clear view of the length or the duration of what we need to do, that will be able to give a direct impact. In terms of FX market, what's our view? Typically, we've always managed our liquidity from two perspectives. Perspective one is in terms of the trade book we have, other obligations, and then also you support the customers with your own internal liquidity, which is part of what we've been doing. Conversations about adjustments for savings interest rates. Right now, we're still using the regulatory interest rates. That would be very positive for us if that comes true, because that's about a quarter of our deposit book. Asset conversations in view of the risk we see for COVID-19. We've already done a full view analysis of the loan book, sectoral, across, and we've looked at three scenarios. And our three scenarios, we have a mild scenario, we have a medium scenario, and we have a severe scenario. And from a mild scenario is where we look at this being over basically by the end of H1. And when we say end of H1, mean that people can now start going back to work fully by July. That's the mild scenario. The medium scenario is that this goes on for at least 6 months. So you're looking at normalcy returning in quarter four. And then the severe scenario is obviously you're looking at normalcy returning by the end of next year. So we have different views about each of them. Obviously, they all affect, the model throws up different numbers for each of them. It goes on for a longer period. You've got more stress from a government revenue perspective. You've got more stress from an FX perspective. Right now, we're working with the mild scenario, but we have our eyes on the other two scenarios. In terms of intervention funds, on our last call, we said we have about $150 billion, which will be impacted by what the CBN, the reduction in rates from the CBN, which is roughly about 60% of our total intervention fund. So the intervention fund book, about 60% of it will be impacted. We've already made that adjustment in March, but it just impacted that quarter by 1 month. So we get a full impact in this quarter. In terms of how much we've taken to CBN, we won't want to put specific figures now because recall that you submit it and then it gets approved. So it's when you really get the approval from them that you can actually now say, look, this is what you've taken and then this is what you've gotten approval for. But it cuts across most of those sectors that we've looked at that could be impacted, sectors like the manufacturing sector, sectors like the transport sector, and a few other sectors, general commerce, and a few other sectors. Thank you.
If I may ask just one more question. So you talked about about 50% of staff working remotely up until June. That's the expectation. So I wanted to get your sense of, suppose, likely impact on quality of service, and then also, in your view, what percentage of your staff really can work effectively remotely? So at what level do you expect, do you think you can still continue having a reasonable amount of staff working remotely and still offer good quality service?
So for the percentages, it actually is driven by the nature of lockdown, total lockdown, partial lockdown, and so on. So what you have, say, in Anambra State might not be the same thing you have in Lagos. So the numbers, when we say 50%, is actually across the country. Lagos, there's partial reopening now or partial lockdown, and that also has affected the number of branches that are open. Today was the first day. So if I understand your question correctly, quality of service, whether 50% of staff can handle that. If a state is in a total lockdown and you have all the staff working, that means they are not doing any work. But if they're in partial lockdown and you have the appropriate number working, then, somehow we've coordinated in a manner that quality of service is not affected. But more importantly, the capability to work from home is something that our previous investment has simply helped us. This morning, for instance, I made a broadcast to all staff live, and I had nearly 3,000 participants. People could ask questions. So we are technology enabled to actually do that, and quality of service is not suffering. If you take Kano, it's total absolute lockdown. And I just heard that another state, either Rivers or so, is about to announce or has announced. So what happens is, when that happens, we adjust our staff numbers to ensure safety. In some cases, we quarter the staff near the office, put them in hotels and stuff like that just so they're able to work. So quality of service will not be challenged. Of course, today you would have noticed that across many banks, there was this rush for people to get into banking halls. So despite all the social distancing plans banks have made, actually there was a bankers committee emergency one on Sunday to prepare for today. But despite that, we still saw a rush. And what that means is that a lot of banks will open or have opened more branches. So we believe that after 3 days from now, it will normalize in terms of flow. It's expected because a lot of branches have been closed in the past. So I don't know if that answers the question. Thank you.
That does. Thank you. Thank you.
The next question comes from Marina Davies from Amundi AM. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. Hi. My question is with regards to your 2020 guidance. You have noted that most of your indicators are on track as of Q1. Can you please let us know which of the parameters are at risk for the full year in your view?
So if you look at indicators, like I said, we're working with the mild scenario now. If it moves into the medium scenario where you have, so what we've projected now is that by Q3, we'll have a semblance of normalcy returning from a business activity perspective. If that changes and it moves into a medium scenario, then a couple of parameters will be impacted. One will be asset quality could be impacted, ROE could be impacted. Those two definitely could be impacted, and cost of risk will also be impacted. If it moves into a medium-term scenario where we now have business operations resuming effectively at the end of the fourth quarter. But right now we're working with the first scenario where we think business activities should resume, you know, some level of normalcy should be in by July, which is Q3.
And in terms of cost of risk, is it possible to somehow maybe looking at the past crisis to say whether it's worse or better and how big could be the cost of risk impact in the medium scenario?
Well, so for the mild, the mild was looking at about 1% from a cost of risk perspective. If it gets into the medium, it would move about 50 basis points higher to about 1.5% if it gets into the medium. And that's because that affects both a country revenue perspective, which also affects individual obligors.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Emmanuel Adeleke from ARM Securities.
All right, thanks for taking my questions. So I just have two or three questions to ask. So first of all, I just want to know, based on your projection, how much of your loan book are you looking to restructure? And secondly, how has been the activities on your e-banking platform during this lockdown period compared to earlier periods? Then the third question will be, are you looking to take in more intervention funds currently? I think that will be all for now. Thanks.
Okay, so I'll start with the third question. Obviously, there are opportunities opening up in the health sector, and that's been supported by the also being supported by the central bank. We already have some customers who play very strongly there. Some of our customers were some of the companies that were listed in the communique issued by the central bank. So obviously, we'll support them during this period. So yes, if the opportunities open up, we could take more. In terms of e-banking, during this period, what have we seen? We've seen increased adoption, but what we've also seen is that because the consumers are a little bit more skeptical, because people are scared of job losses and all that. So what we've seen is you have a lot more people using the platforms, but in terms of the average transaction per customer, that has started to taper down by the middle of April. We started seeing that tapering down. With the reopening now, if businesses can start generating revenues, maybe we'll see that increasing. But even if you looked at the industry numbers for things like funds transfer across the industry, at a point in time, on a weekly basis, it dropped by almost 12% during the lockdown. So yes, you have a lot more people embracing, but the question is, after you embrace, you need money in your account to spend. And if there's no money in your account to spend, well, you embrace, you do a few transactions, and then you're out. So it's been positive from an adoption perspective, but in terms of velocity, that's another conversation. In terms of the loan book, what percentage are we looking to restructure? We don't yet have a specific percentage in terms of what we're looking to restructure. We've taken a couple in line with the forbearance window of the central bank, and like I said in the earlier question, we wouldn't want to be giving figures based on what we've taken until when we get approval for them. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much.
The next question comes from Jerry Nwebe from Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Hi. I think I just have one question, and that has to do with liquidity. I have a sense because we've seen noticeable decline in liquidity ratios across board since the whole LDR and the CRR penalty came into effect. I just want to have a sense of how bad you think it can get, you know, if there is a liquidity crunch, especially in the banking system. Do you think, are there ongoing conversations with the CBN about let's not be beat and just give banks some sort of leeway to be able to deal with what we're seeing on the ground, especially with respect to LDR, given that most sectors are, the credit rates are heightened across most sectors, so lending opportunities are not very, very fundamentally, you know, justified at the moment, you know, and then the having to, you know, the discretionary CRR deficit I was saying, if there's any chance that the CBN is going to let up a bit, and also on the capital adequacy front as well, if we see no stable devaluation again in the currency, the implications for capital adequacy, which if at any point the CBN may want to ease up a bit as well on that particular front, just to give banks some leeway. Because after all, I mean, for Nigerian banks, we know the Basel II ratio is quite higher than what is even stipulated in the documents. I just want to have a sense of, you know, how bad it can really get in that regard. Thanks.
I think we want to concern ourselves really with meeting the regulations on ground. And so, like I said in the earlier question, internally, we'd like to, you know, keep it at about 32.5 going into H1. In terms of the capital numbers, if you look at our numbers, our Tier 1 capital is roughly about 15%. By the time we capitalize the H1 numbers, we expect it to be significantly above that. So I think from a risk perspective, our risk team will model more, working with what the existing guidelines are, and ensure that the business is compliant with those existing guidelines. They would not want to model with trying to assume what will be done from a regulatory, you know, perspective, forbearance or something perspective. So, submitting what the existing regulation is, and then we take each step day by day as it comes.
The next question comes from Nick Dimitrov from Morgan Stanley Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning from New York. I have a couple of questions. The first one is going to be, where do you believe that we are in the restructuring process? In other words, are we in the early stages or because of your proactive kind of stance, we are probably late in the cycle? And then when you restructure, do you use some kind of in-house developed programs, or it's programs that are mandated by the CBN? And if you can give us some idea in terms of, you know, what these programs represent in terms of, are we just terming out the loans, or there is an actual principal and interest deferral? And then when you restructure those loans, do you downgrade them from stage one to stage two, and do you set aside provisions as well? Thank you.
Okay, so in terms of restructuring, I think typically what the cycle has normally shown is that when you have an adjustment of the exchange rate, if it's sharp, because this is an import-dependent economy, you're always going to have people on your trade book. And a lot of those customers on the trade book, you know, they've imported goods, the goods are in, they've sold, but then when they go back to try and buy the dollars to clean up the confirmation and trade lines, they are out of pocket. For some, if they still have the capacity, then you can decide they can trade out of it. For some who you think cannot trade out, you have to cut your losses. In some instances, you have people who operate in an industry where they actually earn foreign currency, like the oil and gas upstream customers, but they have been impacted from a price perspective. So they still have proven reserves, and what you do is that you term it out over a period, strictly working with the cash flow of the customers. In some instances, if you have to do the restructure, it moves the loan from stage one to stage two. But it depends on the reason why you're doing the restructuring. That determines why it moves from which bucket to which bucket. So do we downgrade? Yes, in some instances you have to downgrade because in some instances you look at the ability of the customer to meet it, and when you look at the variables involved, you have to downgrade. In some instances, there's no reason to downgrade because
it's a straight line model you're using, which is basically the commodity is still there. It's just a reduction in the price. Do we use in-house models? For most of them, we use our in-house models. So from an IFRS perspective, you already have your risk models, the assumptions you've built around your models and all that. So when any of those macroeconomic variables changes, it automatically changes the color of the book, which the auditors are going to look at when they come. Maybe the advantage, you know, the bank should do an interim audit will have over this period is that by the end of H1, you already have the auditors looking at your books and, you know, auditing the books and looking at the impact of the pandemic up to that scenario. So you don't have to wait till the end of the year before someone looks at it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The final question comes from Toisi Oni from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. So I just had a question on dollar liquidity on the ground. So if you can just give us a sense of how large the queue is and if CBN has indeed started supplying dollars eventually in the wholesale, retail, and BDC windows. Thank you.
So, yes, we had some customers, obviously, people who had maturities in April and all that, and because of the skeletal services that were being rendered. I believe they would have started today. I don't know what the clearing rates were today, but I believe they would have started today, and I believe the BDCs will have also resumed their operations today. Unfortunately, we're taking this call same day. Maybe if you speak to us offline in about 2 days' time, we'll be able to give you more color on how it's panned out.
Namdi, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you perhaps have any closing comments before we conclude?
Okay, well, thank you all for participating in this call. We continue to monitor the situation. We continue to utilize our business continuity plans to respond to what's going on and keeping safe as well as keeping the institution safe. So we look forward to speaking to you again at the next call. Thank you. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.